This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to another week of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And Steve, you know, no matter how old you are, you can always learn something. And I learned something this weekend. I learned what the word jabroni means.
What does it mean?
Definition. Okay, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Jabroni, a foolish or contemptible person. Get it together, you jabronis, is an example. So I was happy to learn that one Travis Kelce, who I know in these parts is not exactly the most popular guy for obvious reasons. He unceremoniously ended the Bills' 2021 run to the Super Bowl in the divisional round with an overtime winning touchdown and has carved up Buffalo's defense in the playoffs. But it was hard not to chuckle when he called out the mayor of Cincinnati, who, for those who did not know, going into the game, said he wanted Patrick Mahomes to take a paternity test because Joe Burrow was his daddy.
Oof.
So as Travis Kelce was raising the AFC championship trophy, the Lamar Hunt trophy, on the stage after their 23-20 win over said Cincinnati Bengals, Travis Kelce had the following to offer to all Bengals fans. Do we have that?
Hey, I got some wise words for that Cincinnati mayor. Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni. You gotta fight for your right to party.
And then he quotes the Beastie Boys. So, you know, guy's got a whole new status in my book.
Listen, Cincinnati, we say we win as a team, you lose as a team. Man, all of the city, the mayor, all the way down through the football team, everybody, that was a team loss right there.
I was
for Cincinnati. Oh, my goodness.
These are days when the internet is undefeated, and on social media, it is undefeated in a way that most cannot fathom. And, you know, if you're going to walk the walk, you better be prepared to deal with the consequences if you don't come out on the right end of a football game. And I don't know if I've seen Eli Apple gift as burnt toast more in my life on social media. The number 20 appearing on a piece of burnt toast several times over. In his defense, he really didn't get burned in the game. Although he did get toasted in the wild card playoff that Cincinnati ended up winning. Demarcus Robinson got him to bite on a double move. But, yeah, man, you're going to smoke cigars in locker rooms after divisional playoff wins the next week. People are going to be coming for you if you don't wind up victorious the next week, and that's exactly what happened to him. And I really don't get what the whole Bengals shtick was the whole way. Like, man, calling it Burrowhead Stadium? Like, what are you doing? You're only bringing it on yourself with that stuff.
It's crazy. Now, listen, they played well in the game. It was a close game, hard-fought game. Kansas City controlled it from the outset, even though they couldn't put distance between themselves and the Bengals.
The reason why is because half their roster got injured.
Well, plus, a turnover at the wrong time, all of that stuff. Yeah, and injuries as well. On the one hand, going into the game, you had to admire Cincinnati's swagger because they didn't care. They were literally talking smack to the one seed, Kansas City Chiefs, a team who's played in the championship game five years in a row now.
Yeah,
they played in the championship game, and the challenger comes in talking smack. Now you can say what you want about the AFC. The Cincinnati Bengals went to the Super Bowl last year.
All right, so if you're
but they were on the road.
Yeah. Well, they figured they won it on the road last year, and to me, this is why Cincinnati was a victim of hubris here. You know, just like Icarus flying a little too close to the sun. They've experienced zero adversity since they first qualified for the playoffs. Zero. You want to talk to me about your backup offensive lineman? Okay, I'll listen to that. But they sailed through the postseason last year. They got two takeaways in every dang playoff game last year. That's how they got to the Super Bowl. I mean, Joe Burrow and the offense did some stuff, but they're getting second-half takeaways left and right all the way to the Super Bowl last year and even got a couple in the Super Bowl. Yeah. And came close to winning that. So, you know, you sail to the Super Bowl last year. You play a Bills team that's dealing with, like, PTSD. I'm not a mental health professional, but I wouldn't be surprised if that came into the equation. The first time you're on the field again with the Cincinnati Bengals in the playoffs, you can't tell me that those players aren't reminded of the last time they were on the field with the Cincinnati Bengals 3 weeks ago and that it did not impact them in the game. I think it did. I'm sticking. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Not using it as an excuse. I just think it's a matter of fact. And I think it did impact the way a lot of those guys played in the divisional playoff. That's in the rearview mirror. So bottom line of the point I'm trying to make here is Cincinnati has experienced very little hardship since they've become a playoff team last year and now this year. So it's about time they got a little dose of adversity and what the playoffs can dish out for you in terms of difficult things that you've got to stomach, figure out, and then get ready and come back again and hope you're a playoff team the next year. It's about time they had some adversity because they had none last year.
Did you – and you know, you listen to it, and you see it on the game. I mean, I was watching the game just like everybody else. At one point, the penalties and stuff, and you know, Twitter was going crazy with how the officials were calling the game. I gotta tell you, I was like, that doesn't seem wrong to me.
Right.
I'm saying the officials didn't do a bad job. Roughing the passer going out of bounds. Can you imagine if that was Joe Burrow going out of bounds and the
Unnecessary roughness.
And the Chiefs unnecessary roughness. If that was any, you can't do that. You can't do that.
No,
and I get this too.
The third down or
the fourth down that was called back and they'd stopped the play. They showed it on the replay. The official was running in from the back.
Nobody heard him.
I get it. And, you know, same thing. Holding calls, you can go back and forth. Oh my gosh, you can go back and forth with that every single game, every single snap. It's crazy. The Bengals can say what they want. The Chiefs were in a better spot at the end of that game, and the Chiefs controlled play throughout that game.
I thought they deserved to win. I thought they played better start to finish than the Bengals did.
Yeah, and it was close. There's no question it was close. It was as close as it could possibly be and not going to OT. I'm just saying, I didn't think I'm having a hard time getting my mind around the officials
the Eagles,
deciding that
Niners
game.
There were some missed calls there. The DeVonta Smith catch that clearly hit the ground after the fact and was never reviewed by the sky judge or anybody else.
Why do we have
a sky judge? If you're not going to be aggressive in helping the guys on the field get it right, why are you there?
Well, they've only got so much time.
Understood.
And they've got...
But they got every camera angle known to man. How do they not see that one?
Listen, you got to push buttons and get that stuff to roll back before you can look at it.
Well, have somebody help
the sky judge. And I'll say this, too. As a receiver, I saw DeVonta get up, saw the look on his face, saw him give this signal, two fists together. I was like, I don't think he caught that. You gotta throw the flag.
Yeah.
And I get it. You think, well, they'll look at it. I don't want to waste my challenge. Like, you gotta get that right because the next play is a touchdown.
At the very least, call a timeout
and
give them more time.
Fourth down. Yeah. It was fourth down.
You're off the field.
Throw the challenge flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that, and they, you know,
is that setting up first and goal?
I thought that was a completely botched opportunity by San Francisco.
Yeah,
and when that guy gets up calling like that. Now I know they could have it in their playbook. Hey, if you make one of those catches and get up and do all that, hey, act like you get up and let's do it. So we'll make them waste a timeout, or we'll make them waste their challenge flag when you catch it.
Yeah.
Even if you catch it, get up going like, hey, we better hurry because I didn't really catch that. Make them throw their challenge. No. That ain't what happened there. That is not what happened.
Yeah, he wasn't trying to dupe anybody.
Because if he makes a catch like that in normal times, and the guy calls it, he gets up, and he's giving the first down signal. He's taking a knee, and he's giving the little archer thing towards the end zone. He's doing all his celebrations. He didn't do any of that. He was like, let's hurry up and snap this because I did not catch it.
Right.
You got it. I mean, come on. That's body language 101. What are the San Francisco staff was dead at the wheel. They were asleep at the switch. Dead at the wheel. Asleep at the switch. On that, you've got to know that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know
especially
why
on fourth down. I mean, you're talking about a turnover
down.
On downs, that's change of possession, points off.
I thought
the board.
That was a huge miss. Or now, the way the game came out and all that, it's like
it might not have made a difference.
And I'm all about that. You can make that argument too. But that early in the game, when things are in doubt, because it took Philly a long time to start scoring points.
Yeah,
and if you go into their building, you get up on them or, do the things that the Niners were capable of doing before they're down to quarterback number 8 or wherever it was, you got to think Philly's going to start puckering up a little bit.
I was disappointed that the 49ers didn't go to pure and unadulterated
street ball,
backyard football once you lost Josh Johnson to a concussion. Once that happened and Brock Purdy couldn't throw the ball more than 5 yards, that was the time to put Deebo Samuel at quarterback, who's at least a threat to throw the ball, and just start drawing it up literally on the sideline. Here's the first play of the series. You guys run the X. Just don't hit each other.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You
got to just pull it all out of the bag. Deebo, can you make that throw? Yeah. Okay, this is what we're going to call.
Right. I get it.
And if you got nobody open, start running. What I mean? Like, that's what I would have done.
I
know they put McCaffrey in at the very end, but it was too late.
I know it's social media and it's the world we live in. As soon as that happens where Josh Johnson comes in and all of a sudden he's out with a concussion, all over social media. It was just like when the Bills lost to the Chiefs and Josh didn't get a chance to have the ball in overtime. We got to change the rules. Let them have an emergency quarterback on the roster.
No.
You don't.
Those are circumstances that
no.
Can a cat? That
you don't
could
change
happen to
the
any
rules.
Team.
You don't change the rules because you got into a game that starts to turn ugly because one team couldn't handle
right.
it or had a bad whatever the reason. It's irrelevant what the reason is.
Should have adjusted, and that's what I would have done. Like, you're already down. What was it? 21-7, 28-7.
Yeah.
I mean, throw it. I mean, second half. All right, guys, we're really up a creek here. But here's what we're gonna do. Remember when you were 10 years old and you draw up the play in the huddle? That's what we're doing here. Deebo, you're the quarterback the rest of the way. If you don't have anybody open, you're going to be running. So receivers, everybody else, if you don't see the ball getting thrown, get ready to block downfield because Debo's coming behind you.
Yeah.
And maybe it doesn't work, but at least you can't tell me that they game plan for it. At least it's something that Philly hasn't seen.
At least you can get a chance to compete and throw the football.
Maybe make a few plays, score an unconventional touchdown, something. I mean, I'm not saying that San Fran wasn't trying. They were. But it was a fruitless pursuit, and it just, oh, my God, did it drag the game down. That thing was a snore fest by the time you got midway through the second quarter. It was terrible. I mean, for all that your players put into the season, I thought that Kyle Shanahan should have just said, you know what? Whatever game plan we drew up this week is not going to work now because we don't have a quarterback playing the position anymore. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this instead. I really thought – you got nothing to lose. Nobody would have argued with that.
Right.
You got nothing to lose.
Yeah, it really turned ugly, and it'll give you an idea. Even a guy like Brock Purdy, who you can say what you want, a system quarterback, and he was just a maintainer, a facilitator, all that. The guy's pretty important still. I don't care how little you thought of Brock Purdy or anybody else. He was light years ahead of where Josh Johnson was, and he gave him a chance. And – dropping back and getting caught in the middle of his throwing arm, just a lot like Josh Allen had. It's, and then, on the play where he got hurt, they thought it was an incomplete pass. Turns out it was a fumble, and the Eagles guy just, kind of, like going till after the whistle was, just kind of hustled over, just kind of picked the ball up for a clear recovery, and they end up getting the ball because of that.
Yeah.
Because of that. Yeah, Brock, what a disappointing, sad, unfortunate.
It's the same kind of injury that Josh
had.
And
it's just a horrible way to have your season, and particularly for a guy like Brock Purdy. I mean, you know, it's hard not to.
Oh, he was living the high life for about 5 weeks.
And we were all in it with him, too, right? I mean, how long is this going to go? Let's see. Whether you liked him or not as a quarterback, whether you thought it was going to last or not, it was a compelling story. And to have it in like that, it's like, oh, man.
And I think, you know, going into the Super Bowl now, I think the Eagles are like an early 2-point favorite or something. The Eagles are proof of how good a football team can be when you have a top five offensive line in the league and a top five defensive line in the league. People can talk to me about the A.J. Brown trade for 100 days, and I don't give a crap about that. What I care about is how Philadelphia assembled an offensive line that is top five in the league and a defensive line that is top five in the league. They can go toe-to-toe with anybody on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And that's why Jalen Hurts is an MVP candidate. Why? Because he's got running lanes to use and he's got time to throw. Yeah. And their defense, oh, by the way, led the league in sacks. So
by a
significant margin.
By a mile.
So that is why they are the prohibitive favorite going into the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. And after watching that game yesterday, because I'll be honest with you, you know, we're always working on Sundays, I had yet to see an Eagles game start to finish all season long. And I know that probably wasn't the best example in light of how shorthanded the Niners were after they had no quarterbacks left. But if you can dominate the Niners' defensive line at the line of scrimmage, you're doing something right. And they did that yesterday. So I am amending my plans for the draft for the Bills, Steve. I am going O-line. In round 1, 2, and 3. I know that's ridiculous, I'm using hyperbole to illustrate a point that I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with
that. One of the main reasons that the Eagles have been the best team in the league front to back is because of the players they have at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And is A.J. Brown a difference maker? Absolutely. He's 100% a dynamic playmaker. So is Devontae Smith. So is Dallas Goedert. I'm not saying they don't have it at the skill positions. They do. But the reason Miles Sanders looks like a world beater is because of the guys they got up front. And the reason Jalen Hurts is an MVP candidate is because of the guys they have up front. That's where the most important investments were made. And, I mean, the Eagles, you know how we talk about how the Bills roll 8 guys on the defensive line? The Eagles roll 10.
Yeah.
They dress 10 guys for the defensive line to roll through. Like, Barnett is an old player. He's like 35 years old, but he only plays 20 snaps a game, and he's effective because of it.
Right. Yeah, and you look back and you equate this to what we saw the Bills do and how they finished up the season, and people are complaining about how they couldn't take advantage of a depleted Kansas City offensive line.
Cincinnati
offensive line. The Bills' defensive line without Von Miller, without Jordan Phillips, and without DaQuan Jones
was just as
injury riddled. We didn't know that Jordan and DaQuan weren't going to play until late in the day.
Well, Jordan Phillips played, but he was ineffective. He's a one-armed defensive tackle.
He's getting his labrum replaced. Rotator cuff fixed. So it was. Yeah, it's. At this point of the season, more so, not as much now as it had been in decades past, but now you do, when you get there and you get a roster put together like the Bills have, the Chiefs, the Bengals, the Niners, the Eagles, and some others, or even the Cowboys, you get some of these guys that have a roster put together that are really a pretty salty bunch. And the longer the season goes, and you lose this guy, and it's a little bit of a ripple effect, then you lose another guy, and then it's a bigger ripple effect. And all of a sudden, you're not the same team as the season rolls on. And more you see it played out when the teams really who get to the playoffs, who are really healthy and really playing well, and they just show up big time. It shows up.
CBS Sports NFL insider Jonathan Jones is reporting that the league has informed all 32 clubs of what the 2023 salary cap will be. It will be $224.8 million, which was the estimate that I know Brandon Bean touched on. He said he anticipated it to be somewhere in that range, and that leaves the Bills over the cap. And I'm going to do my quick math here. They're going to be over by about $23 million with who they have on their roster under contract as of right now.
The cap went up $16.6 million
due to the big media deals, the NFL ticket deal.
Some are anticipating in 24 it's going to spike again. That's a big jump.
It is a big jump because it's usually 10 to 12 million a year. Now it's 16, which is good news for the Bills. It means less cutting and contract restructures and everything else.
Getting out ahead of it, they're also saying it's going to spike again hard in 2024. It's going to be 2 years because of the COVID problems and,
they're still not back to where they were expected to
be. No, and they also borrowed from years like this for then, so it wouldn't – instead of having the cap drop to $175 million, they kept it up. They artificially inflated the cap to keep it up because what was going to happen was it was going to be chopped by another $25 million. So they didn't let that happen. And they're still recovering from that, too. Yeah. So when
so somewhere between
hits,
22 and 23 million over for the Bills.
It's this is going to be how much are they over?
22,
yeah.
Yeah. So they've got work to do. It's going to inevitably involve contract restructures, probably some outright player releases, and some extensions to spread some money out, or, simple base salary to bonus, money in the player's pocket, help us out on the cap kind of deals. There'll be a bunch of those, a handful of them, going forward here. Let's go around the NFL, though, Steve. And around the NFL is brought to you by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And we begin, Steve, with... I'm going to start here, the NFL coaching carousel. The Cardinals, who are still looking for a head coach, have requested permission to interview Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, as well as defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo. These, to our knowledge, are the first interview requests for Bengals assistants, despite the fact that there had been 5 head coaching jobs open. There are now just 4. And there very well may soon be only 3. The Houston Texans could meet with 49ers defensive coordinator DeMeco Ryans as soon as today. It's believed he is the favorite to be named the next head coach of the Texans. Meanwhile, over the weekend, the Dallas Cowboys and OC Kellen Moore have mutually decided to part ways. According to reports, this was Moore's request to move on. Jerry Jones let him out of his contract to honor it. And just like that, it looks like he is going to be named the new offensive coordinator of the Los Angeles Chargers. So apparently Kellen Moore has had enough of Dak Prescott, and he wants to work with Justin Herbert instead.
You think that's it?
I think it's part of it. I think it's part of it. I mean, he was there for 4 years. I think he had 3 top 10 offenses with Dak Prescott. Now put him with Justin Herbert and see what happens.
You think it was Dak, or do you think it was the working environment? The way the organization
probably
run.
Both, probably a little bit of both. I would say both.
I mean, I don't know anything
but
about
Dak
anything.
Prescott is a confounding quarterback to work with, is he not? He's either lighting the world on fire or he's throwing 2 picks at the worst possible time in a football game. I mean, that's who he is.
Yeah.
There is no in between with Dak Prescott. It's not like, you know what? He played pretty well today. It's either, wow, look at that guy, or it's like, oh my God, look at that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he is. Yeah. There is no in-between with Dak Prescott.
Yeah, he's a
polarizing guy.
He's polarizing, no question. I've heard people do this. Where do you put it? Give me a comparable starting quarterback in the NFL to Dak Prescott. Is it Cousins?
Somebody right now?
Is it Cousins?
I want to believe that Dak Prescott can do more for you than Kirk Cousins can.
Or what about Ryan Tannehill?
I think they're above average, but in different ways, two guys.
Is he like Kyler Murray?
I don't even like Kyler Murray.
So that's
I think Dak Prescott's a better team guy and a better leader than Kyler Murray.
I'm talking about if you were going to sit there and have your team take the field.
I think Dak Prescott is slightly better than Kirk Cousins. Slightly better. That's probably
and better
right.
than and better than Kyler Murray then too. Or
I'm biased against
is
Kyler
Dak
Murray.
Prescott more effective now than a 45-year-old Tom Brady?
Yes, I would say yes. But if you can't live with his mistakes, you probably take Brady because he doesn't make as many. I mean, the reason Tom Brady has 7 Super Bowls is he doesn't make mistakes. Well, he's death by 1,000 cuts.
Yeah.
Most efficient quarterback maybe to ever play the football. And that's why he wins. He doesn't win because he's got unbelievable athletic ability. He wins because he doesn't make mistakes. He knows how to win the game.
So you'll take Dak over Tom Brady right now, today. I mean,
right now,
he's 45.
I believe
that.
Brady's skills are deteriorating.
Right. Okay. What about, let's go down the list, Aaron Rodgers. You take Dak over Aaron?
No.
All right. Matthew Stafford healthy.
I take Stafford.
Yeah, me too.
I
love doing this because
this is how bad it is.
I love that.
I think that's why Kellen Moore's like.
All right, here's the $70,000 question, $64,000 question.
That's all we're paying? Okay.
No other considerations is just to plug one guy in, one guy out.
For 1 year. We're talking 1 year, one game,
not just,
career?
Yeah. Just,
I'm starting a franchise.
Full off season and through the year, see how it goes. Who would go better? Dak Prescott, Russ Wilson.
Ooh, that's a good one. I would take Russell Wilson only because I want to believe last year for Russell Wilson was an aberration. Not a trend. Dak Prescott has been this way for the last 4 years.
Right. You know, you say you're Dak Prescott in the Dallas offense and all that, like we see, is a known commodity. You think the upside on Russ Wilson's better?
Because I want to believe last year was an aberration.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason I'm doing that.
What about a guy like Justin Fields in a better system, like in a better organization like Dallas?
I think you know more about what Dak is, so if you can live with it, you take that because Fields is still very much an unknown.
Okay, what happens if you put Dak Prescott on the New York Football Jets? I love this. I just love this. I just absolutely love this.
I am going to say if Dak Prescott is on the New York Jets right now,
I could talk.
They are an 11-6 football team, and they're
really
good enough to make the playoffs.
Really?
But Dak will kill them in the postseason.
And then they may win a playoff game.
Kill them in the postseason.
So you think they could win the division against the Bills with Dak?
No.
All right. So they're a wild card team.
Yeah.
So if they go on the road, say this year they get the 5 seed, they go on the road to Jacksonville. Do they beat that team?
They might. They might. They could win a playoff game.
Yeah.
You know?
All right.
That's about it, though.
Yeah, that's interesting. I love that.
He is a roller coaster. He is a personification of a roller coaster.
So his offensive coordinator pulls the ripcord.
Yeah, I'm out.
Kellen Moore, that's his name.
And he gets to work with Justin Herbert instead. Right,
I'll say this.
Talk about going to the penthouse.
That's really intriguing for me.
He is the Jeffersons. Moving on up.
I don't know.
Herbert? You wouldn't rather work with Herbert than Prescott? Come on now.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about going from the Dallas Cowboys,
right,
to the LA/San Diego no fan Chargers. Oh, if the Chargers won the Super Bowl, there'd be like 6 people at the parade.
That's not true.
6.
LA is as front runner as any city in America.
Yeah, we saw
if
that.
They won the
You're
Super
right.
Bowl.
You're right. When the Rams won it, there were 500 people at
That's
their
That's right.
There were 500.
Yeah.
250 of them were employees and families, and the other 250 was the vast majority.
I don't know if there's a more front-running city than L.A.
I get that.
It is as front-running as you can get.
So I'm just saying, if you're Kellen Moore, you're going from building in Dallas at the Star where absolutely everything's about winning football games. And the biggest problem is probably the owner cares so much he can't keep his hands off it.
Right.
To a team in L.A. that is notoriously poorly led.
Yeah.
And notoriously cheap.
They do have 2 $20 million a year receivers. I don't know if we can say that, really.
Okay.
Things are going to change
I'm
there
just
really
saying,
quick.
I'm just saying.
Kellen Moore's a rival.
You can say what you want. It's awesome. It's awesome he's got Justin Herbert to work with. He's going to be – it's going to be great. Everything else is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and very quickly
– a head coach that was on the hot seat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's why you have a new offensive coordinator there.
I'm just, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they, you know, they were – what they were second in the division with a wild card, 10-7, with that guy.
Yep.
With the other guy. Okay. All right, that's interesting stuff, though.
There is more coaching carousel news that we have to get to with you. We saw over the weekend that Vic Fangio was reported to be the next defensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins. Hold on a second. That may not be happening. We'll explain why next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, this is Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Still spinning our way around the NFL with the coaching carousel in full swing, seemingly more on the assistant coaching front than even the head coaching front. And we saw over the weekend, Steve, I saw it on the crawl on ESPN, Vic Fangio, former Broncos head coach, is slated to become the new defensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins. So I was like, oh, all right, that'll be interesting for the division next year. Yeah, you know, we get into the office today, and people are like, well, hold on a second. That might not be happening. Michael Silver, formerly of the NFL Network and now a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, is reporting that Vic Fangio told him last night, quote, nothing has been decided on my end. So apparently Silver is reporting that there is a lot of mutual respect between San Francisco 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan and Vic Fangio. Fangio has worked for the Niners before. He was the DC under Jim Harbaugh when he was the head coach there. And knowing that DeMeco Ryans, their current defensive coordinator, is probably taking the head coaching job in Houston, he'll suddenly have an opening. So the way Michael Silver's painting this, it sounds as though Kyle Shanahan called Vic Fangio and said, hey, before you take that Dolphins DC job, what are your thoughts about working with the number one defense in football next year here in San Francisco? Because I may have an opening for you.
Absolutely. And Vic Fangio's like,
yeah.
I'll listen.
I mean, yeah, now look, the Niners have a bunch of free agents. They're not going to bring all of those guys back next year.
Yeah, they got some pretty
They got to pay
pieces.
Nick Bosa, which they'll probably do.
Right.
But they got some other guys that could be walking out the door. But still. That is a better group than the one they've got in Miami. Not that Miami's got a slouch defense. Their defense is pretty good and good personnel. But Fangio, man, I could see him going back to San Francisco in a second.
Usually, and it's funny, not funny, but we talked about it a little bit last week at the end of it. I'm still a proponent of getting the right guy rather than getting a guy fast. I think the Broncos and even the coordinator stuff with the Miami Dolphins, the 49ers, Arizona's searching for a head coach. And they'll have, if they get a head coach, then they're going to be searching for coordinators as well. I still think it's better to do it slowly and make sure you get the right guy than to go in and say, we got to have a guy because we got to start getting our player evaluations together. We got to start thinking about the draft. We got to start thinking about our needs. Free agency's just around the corner. Don't get caught up in all of that. Most of the coaches from the pool that these teams will be hiring from know off the top of their head what they think of most of the guys that are going to be on the free agent market. So it's better to take your time and get the right guy, and I think all these clubs are doing it. Now, Carolina got their guy in Frank Reich, which it's hard to argue with the reasoning behind that. It makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. But beyond that, the coordinators – and the head coaches, it really seems like this is a very low-key off-season for that stuff.
Yeah.
Really low-key.
I'm surprised how long it is taking. And
a little
bit. Probably due in part to the fact that the teams that were still playing heading into championship weekend had defensive and offensive coordinators that were of interest to the clubs looking for new head coaches. And maybe that put a crimp in the process in terms of the timeliness of it, because you still have four head coaching openings still out there. Frank Reich's the only one that's filled one to this point in Carolina. The other thing in the offseason that now must be dealt with for all the teams that are not still playing, free agency. Cincinnati Bengals have a bunch of key free agents on their roster, including three-quarters of their starting secondary. Both starting safeties, Jesse Bates and Von Bell, along with cornerback Eli Apple, everybody's favorite, all free agents, along with starting linebacker Jermaine Pratt, who lined up next to Logan Wilson in that defense at the linebacker position. Samaje Perine, tight end Hayden Hurst, also free agents. Cincinnati is under the cap to the tune of $44 million in cap space, but a good portion of that money is earmarked for Joe Burrow, who's going to be getting a new contract and gobble up probably at least three-quarters of that, maybe more.
This is third year he just finished?
Mm-hmm.
So he is going to be
eligible for an extension.
All right. So I wonder, knowing what I do about the Bengals in decades past.
It's time to pay up.
Not until his fifth year.
Well, maybe. They might wait. I don't know how you can with a guy that got you to the AFC title game each of the last 2 years and an AFC title.
Because you're not required to.
You're not required to, but
I mean,
how
I
that's
get
gonna
it.
Go.
I mean,
in the end, they will pay him. Do you want to pay him $50 million a year now, or do you want to pay him $60 million a year next year? Because the way that quarterback money's going up,
right?
You can either get in at $50 a year this year, or probably pay upwards of close to $60 as early as next year at that time.
I've heard this bantered around, too, that it might be time for one of these franchises to get their guy and tie his salary to a percentage of the salary cap.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to do it.
So, say, for instance, it's usually been it's somewhere around 17%, 20% is right about where quarterbacks are falling.
Percent of a team's
salary cap.
Yeah.
Well, so what it would be is it would help the club because it would automatically give the guy what he's worth, but also give him cost certainty.
And give the team cost certainty.
Yeah. And, you know, they wouldn't have to hide money. However they wanted to structure it, that's what it would be against the cap.
And they know, okay, we're locked in for this percentage going to the quarterback every year.
And Burrow being that guy who is, you know, he's headed towards Mahomes territory. Mahomes been in five AFC championship games. Remember, he's the one that signed the $500 million a year deal, or $500 million
contract.
So Burrow might be the next guy that they're saying, okay, you know, let's do that, and he might be the guy that gets a percentage rather than a flat number.
Yeah, I don't know that a player agent is going to go for that, especially so soon off the heels of two straight seasons during COVID where the cap went backwards. Does that mean my guy takes a pay cut? Because that ain't going to fly.
Oh, if they have another pandemic.
Who's to say you wouldn't?
I get you.
You know what I mean? That's the only reason I could see a player agent saying, yeah, that's all great, your cost certainty and everything, but I'm not running the risk of my guy getting a pay cut because we have another pandemic.
They could also do that and then have an insurance policy or something pay the
difference.
Like
if the cap goes backwards.
If the cap goes backwards, if there's another pandemic or something like that, or, you know, a catastrophe of some sort.
Yeah, I just don't know how you write that in there and make sure the numbers stay the same.
There are people smarter than me doing it.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not doing it.
There's a lot of them. So, but that's one way they could go. Now, obviously, for Burrow, he's going to say, what's the percentage, first of all? And if they give, you know, if it comes out to be, well, on a $224 million cap, what's like 17% of that? It's 34.
Well, it's 44 plus for 20%. 44
okay.
million for
so let's
20%.
Go, all right, say it's 44 million. Say that's the number. This is about right.
I don't think
now.
It is. He's going to get more than that.
Well,
Kyler Murray got 46 a year. Kyler Murray. What are you going to give Burrow?
Well, that's my point is how much are you going to guarantee? Is it going to be a 20% cut of the salary cap for 5 years, 7 years?
Yeah. The jumping off point, if I'm Burrow's people, is 50. We start there. if that guy Kyler Murray is getting 46, I'm Joe Burrow.
It's unbelievable.
Bro.
Yeah, that's true.
Like 46 for that guy?
I'm Joe Cool.
What am I getting?
I get it. He could stand on the table and say, you know, you need to
start at 50.
Yeah, you need. I'm going to stand on this table, and when you stack cash up to my chin, we'll talk. He might do that. I mean, that Kyler Murray is he comes from that baseball background where he just started throwing.
It's all about me.
It's all about me. Throw a hissy fit, and I'm not going to do anything until I get what I want.
Yeah, he's like Maury in Goodfellas. I want my money.
Right.
Where's my money?
Where's my money? And I'll give you the money. So there it is. You're right. Most guys, football players come from a different place, and they know they got to go in the locker room and live with these guys. And
yeah, but when you're also the guy and you've got success on the field in the postseason to back it up, while another guy who doesn't, hasn't won, what did they win, one playoff game in his career, Murray?
No.
Did he win one?
No.
They didn't win one.
They
doesn't have a playoff
victory. The highlight
victory.
Of his career was Hail Murray.
Yeah.
The highlight.
That guy is getting 46 a year. There is no way that Burrow is not getting at least 50. And it might get higher than that. As frugal as Mike Brown wants to be in Cincinnati, you could get somewhere between 52 and 55 a year for Joe Burrow.
Here's this. And I get it. Now, Cincinnati may play hardball with him. They may. Fine.
Stupid to do that.
Well, they did it with Carson Palmer. Carson just said forget.
Right. Yeah.
It got him two ones.
Got him two ones and no playoff wins. Didn't even make the playoffs.
Well, if you've been following the Cincinnati Bengals back when Mike Brown was doing the day-to-day instead of his daughter, Katie Blackburn, they didn't really
–
they valued one over the other, and it wasn't the playoff wins that they valued.
All right. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to sift through some of the Chiefs' pending free agents to see how their roster could potentially change from this year to next. I know they're in the Super Bowl. They're always going to be good with Patrick Mahomes at the helm. It'll be interesting to see who could be coming off that roster this coming off season. We'll discuss next here on One Bills Live. All right, so last segment we were talking about how the Bengals roster could change based on some of their free agent decisions that they have to make, including 3/4 of their starting secondary being set to become unrestricted free agents. And we decided to peruse around the Chiefs roster to see what decisions they might have to make in the offseason. I don't think it's as egregious as Cincinnati's. Their left tackle Orlando Brown is up. Juju Smith-Schuster only signed a one-year deal last offseason, so he's up. And then beyond that, Mecole Hardman is another guy, starting safety Juan Thornhill. So they've got a handful of players that they have to make a call on. I mean, their roster figures to change. To what degree, I don't know. I think you could argue of the three power teams in the AFC, which I would call Buffalo, Cincinnati, Kansas City right now, Kansas City has the best offensive line, I believe, of the group, and understandably so. They invested giant money in it. Orlando Brown, you know, they acquire via trade. Joe Tooney, they pay top-of-the-market money for him as the top guard on the free agent market.
Creed Humphrey.
Creed Humphrey's a first-round draft choice, their center. So, yeah, they've right. invested, so it should be the best offensive line of those three, and I think it is. How much does that change with Orlando Brown, their left tackle, now a free agent? We'll have to see. Maybe they go back in the draft and get another lineman like they did Creed Humphrey. But, yeah, I think the Bills are going to have to address their offensive line in short order. This offseason, because, you know, they had a lot of veterans on one-year contracts. Most of those players of the backup variety. Saffold's a free agent. You may have to figure out some contracts, you know, with Mitch Morris and Deion Dawkins, who have big money deals. You know, Spencer Brown, Ryan Bates is kind of locked into his deal. He's only entering year two of a four-year deal, which is relatively cost-effective. And Spencer Brown's still on his rookie deal. So, really, it's Morris and Dawkins that you may have to go hat in hand to and come up with some solutions. I mean, I thought, for my money, Morris was the most consistent lineman of the group all season long.
Did he miss any time this year?
Missed a game.
One game, was it?
Yeah.
Or did he come out of a game and come back in the next week?
I'm going to have to double check. I want to say he missed one game and came out of one or two others.
Oh, I think you're right. I think Bates did go to center.
Yeah, and Van Roten went in for him in the Titans game in week two, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he missed parts of some games. Did he miss? Might have missed one start. I'm not going to remember that off the top of my head. But for my money, I thought he was the most consistent lineman of the five, the starting five anyway. Bates had a good season, kind of tailed off a little at the end. You know, he wasn't outstanding by any means, but he was serviceable. Dawkins had some good weeks, and then he had some other weeks where I think even he would tell you he didn't play up to his standard. So, you know, and Saffold was kind of a mixed bag, and, you know, Spencer Brown had his good days and his not-so-good days. It just seemed there were some games where it wasn't a question of ability with Spencer. I just felt there were sometimes he just didn't read the play. Like, oh, here comes the nickel corner off the side. I got to go get him, and, you know, not recognizing things quickly enough.
Yeah.
Diagnosing and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's been taught to me by my own observations and what talking to coach and everything, and everybody says it, and then they have trouble executing the idea that it all starts up front. For all these football teams, the guys with the best offensive and defensive lines get the most out of their skill players.
Yeah.
That's it. It's that simple. The problem is this. As I've said before, it's those guys don't grow on trees. They're different physically. They're big, and they're athletic. And just because, you know, they'll have big guys who will get chance after chance, but they're just not athletic enough or strong enough to be a great player. You spend your whole life looking for those guys because there's never enough of them. You got 32 teams. Each of them have five of those guys that they'd really depend on and go eight. So you're talking about 250 guys or so across the league that you need to be genetically different. You know, Spencer Brown, 6'8". You know, Greg Rousseau, 6'7".
Mm-hmm.
Guys like that. And they, you know, those guys walk around. Those guys are kind of more long and lean. Then you got guys like the guys I played with, like Ted Washington or Fletcher Cox, who are well over 300 pounds, and they can run. You can't find those guys.
Right.
The biggest person you know or you've ever met isn't usually, for most people, isn't big enough or strong enough or athletic enough to play in the NFL. You've probably never met one of those guys. They're hard to find. So there's not enough of them to go around. I had executives back in my day. We're talking about expansion. You know, when in the 90s, when Jacksonville and Carolina come into the league. I was talking about, how much are they going to go? Because if they keep going, I mean, they're going to put teams. We were talking back then about London, England, and Madrid, and Berlin.
Yeah.
Teams like this, you know, we're going to American Bowls. We talk about such things. And at that time, the guy that I was talking to was like this. He's like, "Nah, we're not going to do. We won't be able to do it." I go, "Why not? You don't have enough. There ain't enough players."
Well, Eric Wood talks about it all the time. The state of offensive lines in this league is at an all-time low in terms of talent across the board, and about half the league has average to substandard offensive lines because, as you said, there aren't enough good ones to go around.
Yeah,
it together every year.
They keep track of all these guys coming out of Power 5 schools, all the guys coming out of Division 1 schools, Division 2 schools, Division 3. They know where all those big guys are. They look at them because they're trying to find them. And you've got to be you got to be able to do some things athletically. They can't just because you're big, don't cut it.
Yeah.
And I've seen it for decades. And he said, listen, we can't expand too far because there's enough guys to go around. We don't have the good players. Plus, he goes, what happens is we expand to, say, what are, you know, picking up 40 teams.
Oof.
And you got them in, you've got them in, you know, Mexico City and all these places, you know, whatever, pick your cities. He goes, the level of play is going to start to decline because there aren't enough really good football players to fit out those teams.
We're talking about 40 new starting offensive linemen for eight teams. You have to find 40 starting caliber linemen for those eight teams.
And this the team,
not,
the
let 30, alone backups.
The 32 teams now are looking for guys.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we got to take a break because when we come back, hour number two will be kicked off with Boston Globe senior NFL reporter Ben Volen joining the show. He's going to talk about some of the things he's looking at with respect to the Super Bowl matchup coming up here in a couple of weeks, as well as some of the developments going on in New England. They have a new OC up there, a new old OC. What does that mean for Mac Jones? We'll discuss all of that with Ben Volen next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, hour number two on a Monday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, One Bills Live. Pleased to be joined now by senior NFL reporter for the Boston Globe, Ben Volen, joining us on the show. Ben, how you doing? You ready for a Super Bowl?
I am. I'm ready for the Andy Reid Bowl, the Kelce Bowl. Bring it all on. Let's see it.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Do you have any issues with the way those games went yesterday? I mean, I know social media tends to hyperbolize everything, and it's either all of this and none of that, or all of that and none of this. What did you think?
Well, Steve, like the rest of you, I thought the Bengals got jobbed yesterday. I thought the officiating was pretty one-sided. And to see if I was just being, you know, visceral and a fan – I called up a guy, Jim Diopoulos. He used to be a supervisor of NFL officials for 15 years. He was an on-field umpire. He worked the Super Bowl. So I said, Jim, what'd you think? Oh, the Bengals got hosed yesterday. I can't believe all those missed calls. So even the officiating community didn't think the games went so well. And it's a shame that we're talking about the officiating and not what a warrior Patrick Mahomes was last night. And what, even Joe Burrow played like a champion. And I just wrote an article that just published on bostonglobe.com. It's these all-star officiating crews that they do in the postseason where, you know, you're with your crew all 18 weeks of the regular season, and then they just pick the best of the best, and they do a mishmash crew during the playoffs. And the guys that are working the conference championship games yesterday, that was the first time they ever worked with each other. They didn't have any other prior game to work with each other. And you see confusion and dysfunction, and it's not seamless to have these guys who haven't worked together before having to do this in these big games. So I thought it was really unfortunate. The all-star officiating system, it's actually collectively bargained with the referees, so it's not like the NFL can just change it. They would have to change it with the referees. But I just think they've got to come up with something a little bit better, because these mishmash all-star crews are making too many mistakes in the league's biggest games.
I'll say this, though, and I've talked to guys like Mike Pereira and Mike Carey back when they were with CBS and Fox and all that stuff. I've spoken with those guys. Also, Gene Steratore as well. One of the things about those, the finger quotes, the all-star crews, most of the guys on those crews have worked with at least two or three of the other guys on the crews throughout different years. So it's not like they're strangers showing up. But you're right. As a crew, they haven't worked together. But with individuals and line of communication, being friendly enough and being familiarized with those guys, usually that's the case. And I get it. You could make it crew wide how the game, you know, how the officials are evaluated instead of individually. But I've heard as well that has a ripple effect with the evaluation process that the officials don't like because of the way that comes. You know what I mean? If you get a weak link in your crew, all of a sudden the crew starts to be dysfunctional because they're trying to cover for one guy who's not doing it the way, you know what I mean? So
no doubt.
Yeah. So it's a slippery slope, but I get your point.
And not to get too hung up on this, Steve, you're right. In the NFC game, John Hussey, the referee, I believe he had three other guys from his crew working with him. So at least there was some familiarity there. The AFC game, Ron Torbor, there were eight officials, including the replay guy, coming from seven different crews last night. So everyone is from a different crew. They maybe have worked with each other in the past, but that was really just a mishmash collection of officials. And this was strange, something I found too. There was – so Ron Torbor was the nighttime official, and John Hussey was the daytime official. There was a member of Torbert's crew working, but in the NFC game for Hussey, they didn't even put him on Torbert's crew. And I'd love to know how they came up with that. So, you know, one solution I saw too might be you have all the – right now they're very inclusive. They had, I believe, 12 different crews officiating these 12 different games so far. And instead, they should just have all the best crews work the wild card games, then those best crews work the divisional games, then those best crews work the conference championships. So at least if you have an all-star crew, you're getting three or four games into the playoffs. And you don't have a situation where these guys, this was their first time working together in this game yesterday in the conference championship. So I just, and again, the NFL can't just snap their fingers and change it. They need to collectively bargain it. So it's a whole big issue right now. But I do think it bears monitoring, and they need to make some sort of fix to it.
I know you also had a column on your analysis of the performances by the respective teams in the two games yesterday. And, you know, we saw injuries kind of add up, you know, to an outcome that was just insurmountable for the 49ers. The Chiefs, though, had almost the same number of injuries, granted not at the most important position two times over, but Juju Smith-Schuster goes out. Mecole Hardman goes out. I think there was another injury. They lost somebody. And Mahomes just keeps on being Mahomes with a bad leg to boot, because we saw he wasn't driving the ball as he normally does, and yet still he's making plays and firing passes through cracks in the secondary. I don't know if you could make a bigger statement about having MVP status than Mahomes did yesterday with what he was able to muster up.
Yeah, Mahomes is probably going to win that award this year. The votes were already tabulated before the playoffs started, but he certainly, I think, cemented his MVP status last night. What a warrior performance on that high ankle sprain. A lot of quarterbacks, you know, not only wouldn't be able to move around that well, but, you know, he had to completely change his game. He's a guy who loves to get outside the pocket and create. He had to really stay inside the pocket last night, and a lot of quarterbacks can't function when asked to do that. He still has such a live arm and is so talented and has such great skill players around him and offensive play calling that he was unbelievable. And then still, as we're seeing, still was able to get outside the pocket, make some of those razzle-dazzle plays, that scramble at the end on third and fourth, just refused to be denied. This was, you know, I know Tony Romo, it was a little ham-handed. He tried to make a comment about Mahomes and Michael Jordan and Clyde Drexler. I mean, I get he was saying this was like Mahomes' flu game for Michael Jordan. This was an all-time tough performance, gutting it out on this ankle. He's now got 2 weeks to get healthy again for the Super Bowl, so I'm definitely not counting out Patrick Mahomes, but unbelievable performance. Not many guys could do what he did, and he's just so talented and has such a strong arm that he can be a totally different quarterback like he had to be last night, and he can still be very operational and lead his team to victory.
It was
just such a gutsy performance from Mahomes, and you can't have anything but the utmost respect for him.
Yeah, and it's the same thing on the other side. Joe Burrow put up a heroic effort and on a tough away stadium to play, although Cincinnati might have, you know, made it as tough as they wanted to on themselves because of the stuff that they said before the game happened. And we're seeing the highlight of the Patrick Mahomes unnecessary roughness call on the sideline. What did you make of the Bengals walking into Arrowhead Stadium, calling it Burrowhead Stadium, where the mayor is asking for a paternity test because Burrow's Mahomes' dad? I mean, they weren't holding back at all. It was as though bulletin board material was a new thing for them.
Yeah, they got a little caught up in their britches a little bit. You know, got a little big in the heads, but it had worked well for them. They were talking smack a lot leading up to the Bills game, I thought, and they kind of backed it up that day. And I think when you go into Buffalo and have a pretty dominant win and you overcame 21-3 in Arrowhead last year, you're not going to back down to anyone. And I honestly don't think that's the reason they lost. I mean, if Joseph Asai doesn't make that push out of bounds, who knows how the game is ending. And I give the Bengals, I think, a lot of credit. They went down big early. They gained 0 yards in the first quarter. Joe Burrow's getting sacked left and right. And they made some great adjustments on offense. All of a sudden, early in the third quarter, Burrow's got over 200 yards. They figured out the Chiefs' defense. He's protected. He's got time. That fourth down pass to Ja'Marr Chase, my goodness, what a risky, just gutsy play by Joe Burrow and the Bengals there. They were, you know, this close to pulling it off again. And just, you know, had a few too many mistakes down the end. Their own self-inflicted mistakes, of course. That interception by Burrow on third and short, they're going to be rethinking that one. Should they have just gone for the first down instead of for the big shot? And then obviously the officiating didn't help them either. But no shame in this loss for the Bengals. They played their hearts out. Joe Burrow played like a champion. They're going to be back. Yeah, they probably regret saying some of the things they did, but that was what propelled them to this stage in the first place, is being confident and being able to back it up. And I honestly don't think that any of that stuff factored too heavily in the loss yesterday. I think you just have to give the Chiefs a lot of credit for pulling it out.
And as competitive as that game was, whoever came out of that game, the task was going to be daunting anyway, going against an Eagles team that might be the only one in football that can say they have a top five offensive line and a top five defensive line in the entire league. And really, that is, at least in my opinion, what has unquestionably separated them from the rest of the league this year, going wire to wire with the best record in football. I mean, I understand the A.J. Brown trade was crucial to their success this year, but I don't know, call me old school. I think what they did with their offensive and defensive lines has served that team even more than that trade in particular.
Sean McDermott said it after the loss, that the game is won and lost in the trenches, and the Eagles, they dominate. Their offensive line is fantastic, and the defensive line, 70 sacks in the regular season, third most of all time. Hassan Reddick, the free agent signee, has been unbelievable this year. And once again on Sunday against the Niners, wreaking havoc. So yeah, the Eagles are definitely a very complete team on both sides. Eagles and Chiefs, great X's and O's matchup, should be a really exciting game. That said, I was not overly impressed with the Eagles yesterday. Maybe some of that you have to credit the Niners, who have the number one defense in the NFL, and their defense is outstanding. But the Eagles, it actually took them a little while to kind of pull away, and they did waste a lot of opportunities, and they were very stubborn with the run game. I counted it out. They had 42 runs without kneel downs yesterday. Four of them went for 54 yards, so they hit a couple. Then they had 38 runs for like 96 yards, just ramming into a brick wall over and over. And that's not going to work against the Chiefs. You better come out throwing. You can't run the ball 38 times and not be effective at it against the Chiefs and beat Patrick Mahomes. So the Eagles punter was shaky. Like, you know, they wasted some turnovers. It took them a little while. Christian McCaffrey was running through their secondary for a stretch. And then obviously the Niners just ran out of gas because they didn't have a functional quarterback. But I think the Eagles have a few more question marks right now than the Chiefs do. The Chiefs offense was just so highly operational, so efficient during the regular season. Mahomes has 2 weeks to get healthy now. And like I said, the Eagles, great win, but it should have been a little bit easier for them yesterday. So I do have some question marks against the Eagles going into that Super Bowl.
Well, at this time of year, it's only human nature that all the other fans of all 31 or 32, 30 other teams in the NFL look at those games yesterday, the 28 other teams, and they kind of compare their team to where they would be to get to the championship level. The Bills missed it by a game, did not look good against the Bengals at home. What are your thoughts about the Bills, what steps they need to take, how they got to where they are, and going forward, what are your thoughts now and in relation to the games we saw yesterday?
Well, first of all, whenever you have Josh Allen, your window's open. So they're going to be a competitive team. They're going to be, I think, the favorites in the AFC East, you know, for several years now going forward. That said, I do think this was a team that played down to its talent a little bit this year, except when they played New England. They certainly had no problems with the Patriots. But, you know, in the playoffs, they struggled against a third-string quarterback of the Dolphins and then obviously got manhandled on both sides of the ball at the line of scrimmage against the Bengals. I see some changes coming defensively. There's some rumblings that it could be with the coaching staff, perhaps with the coordinator. Certainly some of the personnel, the safeties are starting to get older on the wrong side of 30. I think the Bills have some retooling to do on defense a little bit. And then they have to get another weapon for Josh Allen to go along with Stephon Diggs. I like Dawson Knox. I like Gabriel Davis, but they probably – I don't know if those guys are a number two right now. And I thought Brandon Bean's comments rang a little hollow when he said, we don't want to suck as bad to go get Ja'Marr Chase. Well, I believe they had the pick that eventually turned into Justin Jefferson. And obviously there are a lot of talented receivers that have come out in the second, third round the last several years. And the Bills haven't taken a pick, I think, higher than the fifth round in a long time. So I think they need to go out and get some more weapons for Josh Allen, make it so that he doesn't have to play so much hero ball and that he doesn't have to rely so heavily on Stephon Diggs. Obviously the Bills are going to be there, but I think they're definitely behind the Chiefs and the Bengals right now, and that's obviously not where they want to be.
And in the division, closer to your home, you know, the Patriots have a new OC in Bill O'Brien, a new old OC, I guess you could say. Is the hope there that he can turn Mac Jones into more of what we saw from rookie Mac Jones than year two Mac Jones?
No question. I think it's just about having a more professional unit there. I mean, Matt Patricia and Joe Judge had never done it before. And so I think this was kind of an ownership call. We've seen some steps from the Crafts this offseason that we haven't seen before, as far as announcing they're going to be hiring an offensive coordinator. And they said they're going to be examining all facets of the football operation. So it seems like the ownership is getting a little more involved now. And so they brought in Bill O'Brien. He's been a quarterbacks coach and an offensive coordinator. You know, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, this is a guy who I think has been a solid coach, but has basically coached to his talent level. When he had Tom Brady and Deshaun Watson, he won games and the offense was good. When he had lesser quarterbacks, he didn't have a history of getting the most out of everyone or getting more out of the personnel than what is out there. They had some lean years in Houston too. So we'll see if he's able to fix Mac Jones or if Mac is what he was this second season. I tend to think, you know, the coaching was an easy scapegoat this year and that a lot of these problems did stem from Mac Jones and his inability to really progress forward. But there was obviously issues with Mac and the coaching staff. There's no need to move on from Mac now. He's only 2 years into his rookie contract. So I think they're hoping that with Bill O'Brien, it'll be a little bit of a better mix. And then one thing I'm looking for is just the volatility. This whole season, Mac Jones was, we saw him screaming at his coaches and going nuts on the field and showing up Matt Patricia. And now he's being coached by Bill O'Brien, who has a well-known temper and certainly has gotten into it with many people before as well. So that will be an interesting dynamic. How do Mac Jones and Bill O'Brien coexist together?
What do you think are some of the other issues? Obviously, if your quarterback and your offensive coordinator aren't getting along or don't see eye to eye on it, that's one thing. What about the talent level of, and, you know, they drafted Cole Strange in the first round last year. What are some of the other issues that may face the Patriots that they have to overcome outside of Mac Jones and whoever's getting the most out of him?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a chicken and an egg situation of did Mac Jones, are the struggles on Mac Jones or because they don't have enough talent around him? And I thought they had decent talent, but definitely not a true number one. No one to the level of Stephon Diggs. You know, Devontae Parker made some plays, but was in and out of the lineup. Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith are nice tight ends, but neither of them are, you know, elite like Travis Kelce or anything of that nature. They don't have many receivers that can win one-on-one at the line of scrimmage. Jacoby Myers, a nice possession receiver, doesn't really put fear into any defense. So they just need elite talent. And that's why I was so disappointed that they picked a guard in the first round last year. They needed a game changer at receiver, and guard is about the least game changing position on the field. And it worked out that way. They didn't have the elite talent. And, you know, you see it like with teams like Miami. I don't think Tua Tagovailoa is necessarily an elite quarterback either, but you put Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill around him and the offense is much better. I think Mac Jones is a guy, he needs everything perfect around him. He needs great offensive line protection and really top-notch talent around him, and then great coaching as well. And then I think the Patriots can be successful. So this will be a big third year for Mac. And I think the Patriots this offseason need to find a way to get at least one or two more improvements at wide receiver and tight end around him.
All right, last one for me, Ben. Handicap the Lamar Jackson situation for me in terms of whether he is back in Baltimore or if he lands somewhere else. And then part two of that is, what are the likelihood of the Jets jumping into the sweepstakes if things don't work out in Baltimore?
Great question. My only guarantee is that we're going to hear a lot about this over the next 6 months. It's just going to dominate the offseason. My gut says the Ravens give Lamar Jackson the exclusive franchise tag, which completely takes him off the market. He can't talk to any other teams. The non-exclusive tag is cheaper, but you only get two first-round picks in return. If Deshaun Watson is going for three, I think the Ravens would be nuts to lose Lamar Jackson for only two first-round picks. So I think they give him the exclusive tag. It's worth $45 million this year, and I think they have every intention to keep him. So my prediction is they do not want to trade him. They want to keep Lamar Jackson. They want to work toward a deal. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised to see Lamar Jackson not sign his franchise tag and kind of hold out. It's not really a holdout since you're not signing the contract, but hold out of camp and make a deal, a big deal out of it, because he certainly doesn't want to get hurt. And he's got a lot at risk still. So I think it's just going to be long and drawn out. And I would not be surprised to see it last into training camp and potentially get right up against the deadline to the start of the regular season.
All right. So quickly, did you see the Greg Roman departure, whether it was mutual or otherwise, as an olive branch to Lamar Jackson, or telling him, hey, we're going to change some things so you can be better? How did you view that? Did you think there was any ulterior motive in that as it pertained to Lamar?
I do think it's an olive branch to Lamar Jackson. You've heard rumblings that the relationship between him and Roman wasn't always perfect. And especially the wide receivers on that team didn't love the fact that they were kind of phased out in favor of running backs and tight ends. So I think this might just be a nod towards the Lamar Jackson, but also other guys in the locker room too, that were willing to change things up for you. You know, the fact that you go back, and I think the Ravens were pretty clearly upset that Lamar wasn't available for that playoff game. But then on the Monday or Tuesday afterward, John Harbaugh and GM Eric DaCosta were effusive in their praise of Lamar Jackson, over the top, saying how much they love him and believe in him. And he was this close to playing. And part of me thinks they're just kind of buttering everyone up to get ready to trade him. And maybe that's the case, but I do genuinely think they want to build around Lamar Jackson. They're very far apart on what the contract should be. Lamar wants the Deshaun Watson contract, and 31 other NFL teams are adamant on making that just an anomaly kind of contract and not letting that be a trendsetter. So I think unless Lamar Jackson's willing to come off that demand, him and the Ravens are going to be butting heads for a while.
Ben, thanks. It's great talking to you. Appreciate you spending some time with us.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. That is senior NFL writer for the Boston Globe, Ben Vallin, joining us. And yeah, I think he's right. We're going to be talking Lamar a lot through the course of the offseason. Leave it to the Browns to screw it up for everybody else with a fully guaranteed contract for a guy who's got off-the-field transgressions. Because now it's completely set a precedent where now all these other quarterbacks who have done a whole lot more than Deshaun Watson has done on the field the last 2 years, saying, whoa, that guy's got a fully guaranteed deal and he still might be in trouble with the law. What am I getting? I've been a model citizen over here in Baltimore. You know, I've got an MVP.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I haven't been the picture of health the last couple of years, but I'm still one of the best eight quarterbacks in football. What are you going to do for me?
Yeah, that's right. He's right.
He's got a leg to stand on.
He's got a point. But I'll say this, too. The club, there's a lot of people out there that say Baltimore hasn't given him enough weapons. They haven't. Let me tell you something. That's good football coaches give your players what they need to do their best work with the skill set they have. And that's what Baltimore did. You can say, well, they didn't draft a first-round wide receiver. No, they didn't. In fact, it's hard to even get free agent wide receivers to sign in Baltimore because they know the passing game.
I'm going to be blocking a lot.
They're run blocking. And nobody wants to play in that offense as a wide receiver. They got Sammy Watkins, who's on his, fifth team? Fourth team, who's a great talent.
He doesn't block, though.
But, yes, I mean, they're
not for
they're,
nothing.
They're having a hard time finding a guy. Now, they could draft one, yeah, okay. But
well, they did with Rashad Bateman.
What, did he get hurt run blocking?
He got hurt.
So, anyway, the Baltimore Ravens built their entire franchise around Lamar Jackson.
As well as the scheme.
The scheme particular. I don't really have any time to listen to people who say they aren't doing enough. They've done more than any they would have done as much as any other team in the league to give a quarterback what he needs to with his skill set to succeed. Now, if he wants to start expanding and start doing other stuff, he's got to show proficiency at it.
Yeah. I just get the sense with the departure of Roman, much to what Ben was saying, there are guys in that locker room that are tired of this scheme and think they can only go so far with it.
Exactly.
And I think Lamar...
I agree with him.
And I think Lamar, right or wrong, believes he could be a more proficient passer in a more advanced passing attack than the one he's been stuck in since he came into the league. Now, he might not be right about that.
He may be right. He may be more... It's not asking a lot.
No.
And the bar is low for him to be a better passer in another scheme. How hard is it to have another scheme that where Lamar Jackson could be a successful thrower and then have the same running attack?
It's clearly not a big ask because they wouldn't have made the change if they didn't think it was possible. So they're going to at least entertain it in an effort to keep him under contract. We will bend to your demands so you stay here and don't go elsewhere. That's really what the Ravens are doing. By saying goodbye to Greg Roman. So we'll have to see how it all pans out, if in fact he is still there. It is one of the biggest offseason storylines that there will be in the league this year. We have to take a break here. When we come back, more on that subject matter and a little NFL true-false. Haven't done that in a while. That's coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. It is time for us to play a little NFL true-false, something we haven't done in a while. We do more of it in the offseason. Presented by Patron Tequila, the official tequila of the Buffalo Bills. And we begin, Steve, with the Broncos quarterback. Okay?
Okay.
Broncos quarterback Russell Wilson's issues are fixable. True or false?
That's true. The issues he had in Denver this year would mean that he absolutely forgot how to play quarterback and, you know, like parachuted in having never played before. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's fixable. I thought it was a disaster in Denver starting from, you know, from the head coach and his philosophy all the way down. I get it. In Seattle, he had a coaching staff that was well entrenched, knew what they were doing, had a system in place to be versatile enough to let players with different skill sets play well at their positions, including the quarterback. In Denver, that was not in place. You had a one-year head coach, you had a guy trying to run his system and didn't really realize or didn't make the adjustment to a guy who had Russ Wilson's specific skill set. Coaching staff didn't adapt to him at all, and that's a huge mistake. Coaches need to coach the players they have. They're not coaching a system. They're not coaching X's and O's. They're coaching human beings. And if a guy does stuff really well, it's your responsibility to give more of that to him than the Broncos were giving to Russ Wilson. So, yeah, Russ Wilson can play a lot better than he did for the Denver Broncos this last year, and I think you can fix that.
I think it's fixable, too, so I would say true. The prevailing opinion out in Denver was Hackett's system, which is timing-based, you know, back foot in the ground on a three-step drop, bang, fire the ball out. That is not what Russell Wilson has done for the balance of his career. He's kind of more like Mahomes and Allen. He likes to kind of hang on to the ball a little bit, buy some time, make plays downfield, and that's just not – what Hackett's system does enough of, and so it was kind of like a square peg in a round hole kind of thing.
It's always a mistake for coaches to come in and say, I'm going to bring my system into this offense or this player, this team or this player. To me, it's I'm going to coach this offensive team, and here's what we're going to do. He does that well. Okay, we're going to let him do that. We're going to this, that, that. We're going to ask this guy to do that. You're going to design an offense around your players. That's what it needs to be at this point in history in the NFL. If you're going to install a system, that system better be comprehensive in its ability to tailor to players with different skill sets, including the guy taking snaps. It's a difficult job, no question about it. It's complicated, a lot of group dynamics involved. How do you get, you know, these guys mixed with that guy? Does a guy accept coaching? Is he going to buy in? All of that stuff goes into the mix. But at this point in history in the NFL, that's what you got to do. Your system has to be built around your players and their skill set. Let your players do what they do best. Anything else is substandard.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. NFL true false number two, from one quarterback to another. Giants quarterback Daniel Jones has earned a contract extension with the team. True or false?
Not a top flight extension. He's not going to get elite quarterback money.
No.
I'd pay him for that position. I'd pay him 23.
Nope, not going to happen.
23 to 28 million a year.
You'd probably have to pay him somewhere between 35 and 40, I think.
Then I would say no.
Okay.
And that depends, too, on what your other options are. But
once again, we use Kyler Murray as our barometer here. He is getting 46 average annual value on his contract.
You think
Daniel Jones is probably a step below him in terms of ability, but he is mobile like Murray. I would like to see their stats side by side.
You think?
And Daniel Jones had a better one-loss record than Kyler Murray this year. 9-6-1 as a starter.
You think the Cleveland Browns messed things up for people? The Arizona Cardinals did it too.
True. You're not wrong. He only had 15 touchdown passes this past season.
I don't think
16 games.
I don't think the guy can play.
Completed 67% of his passes, only had 5 picks.
I don't think the guy can play.
Yeah. I'm trying to see what his yards per attempt were this season.
I mean,
6.8.
To me, with Kyler Murray, your whole offense has to be street ball. Just move him around, let guys go out and get open, hold him off him as long as you can and go.
But we're talking about Danny Dimes here, so you would say no.
I would say no.
I don't think he's earned a contract extension. The interesting thing is GM Joe Shane said he would welcome him back. He just didn't say at what price. Wisely did not say. I think they would bring him back if they run into a scenario where they cannot do better, which, you know, They went to the playoffs. They're not drafting high to draft one. You know what I mean?
All right, who's better?
Well, it depends who's available.
Well, let's say Derek Carr.
Right, but that's going to cost you something.
Brock Purdy. Jimmy Garoppolo.
You think Garoppolo's better than Daniel Jones?
Well, you don't have to pay him. If he's cheaper, yeah. How much better does he got to be? Or if he can just be the same and run your system. Mm. And we're talking about not paying a guy who's not going to earn $50 million, right? So, you know, is a $38 million Daniel Jones better than a $20 million Jimmy Garoppolo? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
That's where it starts to, you know, be a massive gray area. I move on.
Yeah, I mean, you want to do better than Daniel Jones, you do. But he did help you get you to the playoffs, even though Saquon Barkley was the engine that made the offense go. I don't think there's any debating that.
I mean, Brock Purdy played pretty good for the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm pretty sure if I'm Brian Daboll, he'll say, you know, give me a guy with some physical skills, I'll make him, and you know, we can get by with him. We'll teach him, right? I don't know. I'm saying no. You've got a long resume for Daniel Jones. Certainly, only 1 year under the current regime, but a long resume. You've got to know what you've got there, and if you can do better, you got to go. You got to do it. You're not going to sign that guy to big-time quarterback money. No way.
Yeah, you would think no. The question is, what is he willing to take? What does he think his value is? Would he? Because to me, if you're the Giants and you want to keep him around, it's to be a bridge, right? A bridge to the future franchise guy, whoever that might be. You know? Yeah, I just don't know if he's going to be willing to accept a two-year deal to be a bridge quarterback for $15 million a year, whatever it is. You know what I mean?
And will he be as effective next year as he was this year?
Like, we'll take you back until we can find somebody better. It's basically what they'd be telling him.
Well, I mean, that's welcome to the NFL. I mean, that's the way it goes. But
so there it is. NFL true false number three. With the Jaguars making the playoffs, Doug Peterson should win coach of the year. True or false?
He's going to be in the conversation. I say
Daboll's in the conversation.
Daboll's in the conversation.
Some would argue Sirianni should be in the conversation. Kyle Shanahan basically doing it with no quarterbacks.
Right.
I mean, you could argue McDermott.
What about Pete Carroll?
Yeah, with Geno? I mean, they were barely above 500. I don't know if that's coach of the year worthy. I think Peterson's probably right up there with Daboll because – Daboll did it with a mediocre roster, got his team to the playoffs, and won a playoff game. And Peterson took a team that's got more talent but was 3-14 last year and won the division.
I'll say Doug Peterson's got to be in that conversation because you're right.
Is he your pick, though? Does he win coach of the, should he win coach of the year in your estimation?
The Giants were only 4-13 last year, and Jacksonville was 13-4. Jacksonville won the division.
Correct.
Giants did not.
Yeah, they also play in the AFC South, though.
The NFC East? Come on, man. Well, I get Philly, but...
Yeah. Philly and Dallas.
Last year, Philly was 9-8. Yeah. I'm going to... Yeah, I would say Peterson deserves it.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't be upset if he won it, so I'll
not
say
at
true.
All. I like that. And they won a playoff game.
Yeah.
So.
In a spectacular fashion. That is NFL True False, presented by Patron Tequila, the official tequila of the Buffalo Bills. We take a break and close things up next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, Steve, so with the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl, two of their Pro Bowlers cannot participate in the Pro Bowl games, so replacing them are two Buffalo Bills. For left tackle Orlando Brown, Deion Dawkins goes to the Pro Bowl games, and with Travis Kelce playing in the Super Bowl, Dawson Knox replaces him at the Pro Bowl games. And then there was another player who was injured, Quentin Nelson of the Colts, could not participate due to injury. He is being replaced by Roger Saffold. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's a volleyball game now. I mean,
it's
a meet and greet. So
what feeling does that leave you with, having participated in seven of those when it was a game and guys did try hard?
They played hard, yeah. I mean, it was –
Is it disappointing to see where it is now?
No, it was sadly predictable.
Yeah.
Particularly – and it's also sadly predictable that what it's turned into when they started allowing fans to vote. It's now kind of a brand contest a market contest. You know, I mean, New York players are always going to get more votes than players from Green Bay or wherever else. So, and the fact that the game doesn't matter and doesn't even exist anymore, that says it all. It says it all, you know.
Yeah. So, it will be out in Las Vegas. Those guys will be participating. That's it for us today. Steve and I will see you tomorrow at 1:00.